The only two lines we have open are west of the Rockies and the international line. Those are ringing too. So hang on. If you want to get through, we'll get you a minute. Let's clear out some callers, get some questions and comments about the new book, about the special mission to kidnap and or kill the Pope during World War II. Just getting play in this new book on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. You can link up to Dan Kurzman through coasttocoastam.com. A special mission is the book. Let's go to the phones. Dr. Francis is in New York for Dan Kurzman on Coast to Coast AM.
Yes. There's several things that kind of disturb me, you know, with the discourse this evening. And the first is, you know, Dan seems to have forgotten about the Concordate, which Pacelli or Pius XII demanded and got. And in the Concordate, it actually told the German Catholics to follow Hitler and to abandon their political parties that challenged the Nazis, such as the Catholic Socialists and other parties in different areas of Germany, such as Munich or Bavaria, etc. Also, the fact that, in a sense, Pacelli committed, or Pius XII committed, with his knowledge of the Holocaust, a sin of omission or a sin of commission. The papal nuncio in Switzerland.
Dr. Francis, I'm just curious. How is it that you think we didn't talk about that? Didn't we just talk about whether he, whether like the kind of the Sophie's choice that he had? I'm trying to understand your point of view on this, just because I know you can.
Ian, your question was very good that you raised regarding what if Pius the 12th did this? Wouldn't it have affected change? But what I'm trying to say is the Concordate told all the good German Catholics to follow Hitler and basically don't challenge the system. In fact, it demanded that the German Catholic parties that challenged Nazism were disbanded. And it allowed, in a sense, for Hitler to get into power because he didn't have that opposition after the Concordate was signed. Basically, what it meant was that Nazi Germany paid the Vatican the fees for Catholic education. So the Catholic education fees were paid by the government.
Oh, that's right. But what year was that, just so I understand? What year was that?
The Concordate was signed in the 1930s.
Okay, go ahead.
Also, what I want
to Let's give Dan a chance to answer there too. Go ahead, Dan.
Okay.
Well, I go into the question of the Concordat. The thing is that the Pope he saw that Hitler wanted to destroy the Church from the beginning, as soon as he came into power, and his only chance, as he saw it, was to do with sign a concordat with Germany, with Hitler, in which there would be complete separation between church and state. As a matter of fact, he would have to give up the Pope would have to give up any support, political support. Like there was the only democratic party left in Germany at the time was a party which supported the church, and so he would have to give that up. And so there was a complete separation. Well, the point is that Hitler was really putting a gun to the Pope's head. Hitler was ready to destroy the church unless the Pope agreed to sign. Of course, at that time the Pope was Pope Pius the 11th. Not the, that was before Pacelli became president. Became Pope.
Hang on. I got both people are talking at the same time.
From the Pope's point of view, and from Pacelli's point of view, the alternative to a concordat was the destruction of the German Church, and so that doesn't mean that it was a good thing to have the Concordat, but it was better than being destroyed from his point of view, from Pacelli's point of view.
When he was papal nuncio in Berlin, so in a sense, Pacelli knew what was happening, and what I wanted to also say is I would disagree. If Pacelli understood that, it was a mistake for the Vatican to sign the Concordate. I wanted to say this, though, that the Vatican nuncio in Switzerland was aware of the International Zionist Organization that informed the Vatican of the extermination of the Jews. In fact, it was from Pacelli's office that he could actually see the trains taking the Italian Jews out of Italy. And he chose nothing. He chose to pray in silence. He chose to pray for Hitler's soul in silence. He wasn't courageous like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who opposed Nazism and
Well, wait, hold on a second. I just want to stay kind of in control a little bit of this because it just seems sort of like you want to go off on a diatribe, and I totally get that. But I mean, I guess the initial point was you sort of felt like Dan didn't address that. We didn't get into it on the air, although we did sort of symbolically in the discussion we had. But it's all over the book. And just so you know,
I wanted to say this too, that
it's like dozens of pages in the book.
Okay, but Martin Bormann's son became a Catholic priest. So the notion that Bormann would actually participate in, you know, destroying the Vatican or kidnapping the Pope or something is preposterous. In fact, his son, and Dulles' son, of the OSS, went into the same order after the war. So this notion, I think these are issues that have to be looked at critically, and I would say that I don't think Pacelli or Pius XII is worthy of canonization or beatification because he represents, you know, dealing with evil and not challenging it. And
Hold on. Honestly, I mean, can I just say, I don't think Dan's making an argument.
This is such a distortion of the situation that it is almost not even worth discussing, because the fact is that that Hitler and the Pope hated each other. They feared each other. And that the Pope, when he signed the Concordat, he did it with a gun to his head. And of course, he could have said, "I won't agree to separate the church from the state." But there would have been no church, perhaps, after that. I'm not arguing that he should have. Sure, you can argue that he should have been willing to see the church destroyed as a matter of as a matter of morality. Okay, you can say that. But the point is that he didn't do it because he favored Hitler. He did it to try to protect himself from Hitler, and so there's a big difference there. But you could argue, of course, that the Pope and the church should have sacrificed itself completely. That's an argument, because from the moral point of view, you're ready to give up your whole your existence.
Right. Well, let's just leave it.
Say that he did it for evil purposes. I'm sorry, I disagree with you.
Well, I just want to leave it there because I think he's somehow mistaking the idea that you're making an argument for Pope Pius's sainthood, and I think that's what he's mistaken.
I'm not a Catholic, and that's for the Catholics to decide who their saint is. I've never met a saint in my life. I'm certainly not a saint, so I'm in no position to judge whether anybody else should be.
Well, let's leave it there for now and just say I think he might really enjoy reading your book, and whatever it was that he felt like arguing about may be better taken up with somebody who's making that argument. Let's go wildcard line. Christian's in Texas on Coast to Coast AM for Dan Kurzman. Christian, or go to Jeff, I'm sorry. Jeff is in Nashville on Coast to Coast AM. Jeff?
Hey, Ian. Great. It's a great show tonight, guys, and really, who would want to follow that?
Thank you.
My giant question I have kind of follows along the same line you were doing with the hypothetical, which was if Pope Pius had really kind of taken the literal standpoint of what would Jesus do and actually kind of sacrificed himself instead of the Jews, instead of saying, okay, you know what, you can have the Vatican, you can have this, because this is all material, it doesn't matter. The church is in the heart, it's not in the place.
Right.
As long as you leave these Jews alone, and you leave,
it'd be interesting to think what would happen.
My only question is, to your guest, Dan, I think it was, what would be your opinion? You've studied all of this now, especially all of the situation, and you certainly know this side of Hitler and Hitler and all those guys. What would be your opinion on what that would be?
What would have happened?
I'm not quite clear of the question.
You're saying, what if, taking my proposal that he had just decided to martyr himself, Take your best guess as to what you really do think would have happened if he had said, you know what, I cannot let this happen. I'd rather die myself than to see this happen.
Well, he may have died, and history may have said he was a great man. He maybe would have been the greatest saint of all. I don't know. But the point is, I'm just arguing from his point of view that why he did this, whether he's justified or not, is a question for others to answer, or for history to answer. I'm just saying that he didn't do it because he was anti-Semitic. He didn't remain quiet because he was anti-Semitic. He didn't do it because he liked Hitler. He did it because he wanted to save the church. You can argue that he should have let the church go and let the whole
Right.
Vatican be destroyed. And that's a good argument. You can have an argument like that. But I'm saying that I'm just trying to point out the motivations for this, and whether you agree with the motivations is another question.
It's part of, but it's not the central story to a special mission, Hitler's secret plot to seize the Vatican and kidnap Pope Pius XII. Beth is in British Columbia on the wildcard line on Coast to Coast AM for Dan Kurzman. Beth?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
How are you?
We're
I'm
all
fine.
wonderful, thank you.
Good. I have three very important questions.
Put your most important one first in case we don't get to the other two.
Okay. What role does he see that the church at present, headed by Pope Benedict, is playing in the role of partisan with the New World Order?
Okay, I don't know that Dan would be prepared to answer that, but Dan, do you want to take a swipe at that?
Well, I'm not really acquainted with the situation as it is now with the present pope.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just a layman on that, but I think that I do know, basically what happened, during World War
World
II.
War II. Your other question, Beth?
My other question was he aware that the occult was used by the Nazis, and that as an occultist, after 6 years membership in the occult, they have to join a church?
Who are you referring to?
I'm not sure I know about that.
I'm referring to people who became active in the Nazi movement,
Yes.
Right.
who employed the occult, which was largely used in the war. Hitler referred to
Right.
the occult and referred to
Right.
occult sciences
Right.
in order to further himself.
Right.
So as a occultist, one would have to join a church, a regular church, a Christian church,
I've never heard
after
that part.
six. Oh, it's told to me by ex Satanist.
Well, I'll
I
tell you,
that may be
my
true,
book does not deal with that aspect
yeah.
of the
Yeah.
situations, and I don't think I'm qualified to answer that.
Now, it was interesting, though, and this, I think, that last part, I just never heard that piece, although that certainly, it would capture the imagination to think that there's all these sort of secret occultist agents working within Christian churches. But it is interesting, though, Dan, and I think this part she would really enjoy reading in the book was really how there was all of this sort of new world religion being built around Hitler. And I think that part is really very compelling. And especially as much as Himmler
Yeah, well,
was
Hitler
buying into it.
wanted to have a Nazi religion based on his own ideology, in which he would be the spiritual leader of the world. That was his whole idea. He wanted to. That's why he wanted to, he saw the Pope as the principal religious leader standing in his way, because
Right.
he was the most important individual leader and individual religious leader, and he wanted to get rid of him. Basically, that was it. And incidentally, I might point out that what happened when the Jews, when the Nazis went in to round up the Jews. Because that's rather important to know what happened, because I interviewed Princess Pignatelli, who was a close friend of the Pope. And on the morning of October 16th, 1943, she got a telephone call from a friend of hers that says, do something. You're the friend of the Pope. Go to him and stop what's going on now. The Jews are being rounded up in their homes, and you've got to stop it. You've got to get the Pope to stop this. So the princess told me that she ran over to the she went over to the Vatican, and she when the, where the Pope was actually at Mass at the time, and she dragged him out. She says, you've got to do something about the Jews. And he acted as if he didn't know anything about this. I mean, he said, but they promised me they wouldn't touch the Jews. So in any case, what he did was ask his or order his Secretary of State Cardinal Magnoni to immediately see Weizsäcker, you know, the
ambassador.
German ambassador, and they had a meeting which is really extraordinary, because Magnoni said that if the Germans did not stop the roundup, that the Pope would feel it absolutely necessary to speak out. This right. is the first time he was ready to give up, you know, this idea that if he spoke out, something might happen to the church. And as a matter of fact, he said, the Pope is ready to leave it to divine providence to decide what will happen afterwards. And so this is one of the main reasons why, why Hitler in the end finally agreed to stop the roundup, but the guy really I think performed perhaps the final action which made Hitler change his mind was Wolf, who was in Germany, and he told Hitler that if it didn't stop, the Italians would rise up. You know, there was a lot of anarchy in Italy then after Mussolini was thrown out, and the communists might take over, and Wolf, who was head of the SS troops in Italy, said he didn't think he would have the power to be able to stop such a revolt. And so that, together with the Pope's threat, finally convinced Hitler to stop the
deportation, you
know, the roundup of the Jews,
right.
And once the roundup was stopped, and it was stopped after only 1,000 of the 8,000 Jews in Rome were taken to the death camps. So 7,000 of them managed to survive, and so the Pope then didn't find it necessary to speak out. But I believe that if the roundup had continued, the Pope would have spoken out.
We have a full boat of calls. Everybody wants to talk with Dan Kurzman, and you will next. A special mission, Hitler's secret plot to seize the Vatican and kidnap Pope Pius XII, next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Back to your questions for Dan Kurzman. Stuart is in Texas on the wild card line on Coast to Coast AM. Stuart, you're talking to Dan.
Hello. Mr. Kurtzman, I have a question I'd like to ask you. It might be beyond your realm of expertise, but I want to ask you a question about Adolf Hitler. Is that all right?
Sure.
I want to preface it by saying this. During World War II, there were a lot of wealthy people involved on the side of Germany and England and America, and people know about the Rothschilds and Volkswagen making the tanks, and the German munition makers, and then other munition makers. In all of your studying, have you ever come across the idea, in either meetings that you knew Hitler might have had with other people, do you think it's possible that Hitler was a puppet?
Was a what?
A puppet.
A puppet.
A puppet of who?
That's what I want to know.
You mean that Hitler was taking orders from somebody else?
Well, either involved with people that were involved in the war. You would have to have, like, inside information.
No, I really don't think that Hitler was a madman who considered himself as the great leader and would not take orders or certainly not even recommendations very
from anybody else,
from other people.
He
I don't think that he could be. He didn't have the mentality to be a puppet of anybody.
I think that's it. I mean, to say that Hitler would be a puppet would almost to start kind of arguing for his innocence, Stuart.
Argue his innocence at all. I just wondered if all the powerful people were involved in moving him around in some of his actions.
No, they never moved. He moved other people around.
That's what I was wondering from your experience, if that might have happened. That's just
I can't imagine that. In fact, a lot of people would like to have moved him around, but then if they didn't agree with him, he'd just kill him.
Yeah, and interesting thought, though, Stuart, and Himmler is a good example. You write about him a lot in the book, and even Himmler was afraid that he would get the noose if he tried. I mean, there was just so much influence you could exert on Hitler, and if you really tried to stand against him, you wouldn't have been standing for long.
You're absolutely right.
All right, let's get to Becky. She's in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, on the wildcard line on Coast to Coast AM for Dan Kurzman. Becky?
Oh, my gosh, I got disconnected like 2 times.
I know. We got you back on again. Glad to do it. You have a question?
The lady who answers her phone, she rocks.
Yeah, she's trying to help you. I appreciate it. Gina's a wonderful.
My husband is in the military. He's a major. We're here stationed at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. Just got here after a tour to Iraq. I am a very big, huge World War II buff. We were living in Mannheim, Germany. I am also a Catholic. And just to address some of the other people who have already spoken, I don't see Hitler as being a puppet of anyone. I see him as being someone who pulls everyone else's strings. And in that regard, I would consider maybe the Pope had strings that were pullable.
I don't believe
in, you know, any kind of anti-Semitism or anti-Hitlerism, but just like a protection of a country. I mean, because the Vatican is its own country.
Right.
I mean, you're not just protecting the physical country, but everything that is in the catacombs beneath the city of the Vatican. The assassination attempt, could it be or have been an attempt at Hitler trying to take over the next most powerful man on the globe?
You're absolutely right.
That's
and that's especially why the plot was conceived in the first place, because he was afraid that the Pope would be the main obstacle to him after the war, because he thought he'd win the war, of course, and the Pope would stand in the way of him controlling the rest of the world. So that's very true. I agree with that.
You know what's interesting too about your book, and I have to say, as somebody who's always I just am endlessly fascinated with World War II, in particular with the rise of Nazism. And it just to speak in general to a couple of callers, it's so interesting, especially when in the detail that you give in the life of General Wolfe and Himmler, it really is the best example, I think, in history of when a whole country and their, you know, and millions of people fall through the looking glass. And white becomes black and night becomes day. And it's just all... It's so upside down, and you could see it reflected even in the conversations that Himmler is having with the central character of the book, General Wolfe.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. But I would like to point out the climax of this whole thing, because you know, several months after the Jews were most of the Jews were saved, and the plot, you know, to take over the Vatican was at least shelved. Wolf managed to get a meeting with the Pope, which is really extraordinary because the Pope had never received any high Nazi officer before. And he went in to see the Pope dressed in civilian clothes so Hitler wouldn't know about this, because if Hitler knew about it, he would have gone mad. So they had this meeting, and Wolf promised that you know, he would do his best to stop any future plots against them, and they became quite friendly, as a matter of fact. And the Pope actually blessed him and his family. And then, as Wolf was getting ready to leave, he stood up and he clicked his heels together, And incredibly enough, he forgot which god was which, and he gave the Pope the Nazi salute. And, of course, the Pope was a bit surprised, to say the least. But he smiled forbearingly, you know. After all, the Wolf had simply forgotten who his god was for the moment.
Right.
It was symbolized the fact that Wolf did an incredible feat that probably no other human being ever did. He managed to win the full confidence of both the vicar of Christ and the Antichrist simultaneously. And this is really an incredible situation, but he managed to achieve that feat.
Did he ever find faith other than his belief in Nazism?
What's that?
Did he ever find faith again? Did he ever, after this encounter with the Pope?
No, not really. I don't think he was a very, very
religious man.
Interesting. But, what he did was, and what helped to save his life, aside from the fact that the Pope might have spoken out for him, was that he, as head of the SS in Italy, he had great power, and what he did was turn over the whole German army in Italy to the Americans. Alan Dulles was the OSS. He turned over the army to him. And as a result of that, and not necessarily because of the Pope's influence, he was not charged at Nuremberg. And Wolf was simply put, later, the German, a German court itself, accused him of atrocities and put him in jail for a few years. And that's when he got out of jail, that's when I met him. But you can see what an opportunist he was.
Sure.
And Dulles felt that, how could he put it in, charge him at Nuremberg for what happened, earlier when the guy, took the whole Italian, the whole German army out of Italy and perhaps saved a lot of lives as a result of that.
Well, let's
so, so Wolf was a pretty clever guy. In the end, he beat out the hangman, and although I must say that he died a very poor man. And when I asked him if he could live his life over again, would he do the same thing? And he said, he says, I was young, I was a general, it was such a good life. And so I think perhaps he would have done it over again.
Well, let's go with, let's do this. We have so many people want to talk to you. Just, Dan, I'll ask you to keep your answer short and the question short, and hopefully we can get everybody on the air. West of the Rockies, Chuck is in Canada on Coast to Coast AM. Chuck?
Good morning, Ian.
Morning.
Good morning, Dan. I'd like to preface my question with a couple of quotes, if I may.
Got to be quicker, because we're really trying to get everybody on the air. So,
okay. In the book The Transformation of the Republic by C. Wilcox, Franz von Papen, the papal nuncio, in 1939, stated that the Third Reich is a first world power which not only acknowledges but also puts into practice the high principles of the papacy. Now, that was in reference to the death camps. And then 2 days after Hitler's death, the Vatican issued a communique out of Franco's press from Madrid, calling Hitler son of the Catholic Church, who died while defending Christianity.
I've never heard that.
It seems that there was like a little symbiotic.
Well, there were some Germans.
Pius the 12th.
Wait, hold on. Wait, Chuck, let's get ahead. Dan's got an answer.
Yeah, there
if you
were
want.
Some German clerics, bishops and others, who were taken in by Hitler and until the very end supported him. That was not the feeling of the Vatican itself, and certainly not of Pope Pius.
Let's go to East of the Rockies. Michael has a question for Dan Kurzman on Coast to Coast AM. Michael?
Yes, Mr. Kurzman. You have not given enough perspective on this. Adolf Hitler became the chief spokesman of the Nazi Party immediately after World War I. He spoke all over Germany, giving speeches wherever he could find an audience. For years and years and years, for 15 years, in fact, he could garner almost no support until right near the end, when somebody gave Hitler the idea of organizing in the churches. Now, you mentioned Martin Bormann's son, and if you saw the Time Life series or the color pictures that they did on it, they showed the little child there with Martin Bormann and Adolf Hitler in the Catholic Church being named as the godfather of the child. You told us that there was 40% of Germany was Catholic, 40% of the army is Catholic, but you didn't tell us what percentage of the Nazi Party was Catholic and what percentage of the SS and the Gestapo were Catholic.
Well, let's find out then. Do you know about that, Dan?
Well, there were, I don't know the exact percentage, but there were a lot of, you know, the Hitler tried to get all the people in the SS to leave the church, and he failed. A very few did. I don't know the exact percentage of those who remained, you know, in the SS, remained Catholic. But very few of them gave up their religion. And but taking the army as a whole, 40% of them were Catholic, and they did not give up their religion.
First time caller line, Chris is in Virginia for Dan Kurzman. On Coast to Coast AM.
I did a thesis paper in college about Adolf Hitler. And Stuart's question, if I'm correct, Hitler had relied so heavily on his generals like Goering with Messerschmitt, because he was a part of the Luftwaffe, that, you know, that's what he did. But my question, I have kind of like two questions real quick. One, did Adolf Hitler join with Mussolini, and Mussolini kind of join with the Pope to kind of like befriend him, to kind of like, you know, in a way, go around his back and assassinate him, you know, to kill him? And my second question.
I understand. Did Hitler what?
Did Hitler get with Mussolini, and Mussolini kind of, you know, like go to the Vatican and kind of like, well, since he was in his, you know, in Italy. Kind of like befriend the, you know, the Pope at the time.
No, Mussolini never befriended the Pope.
So Hitler, since he allied with Mussolini.
Hitler was allied with Mussolini. Mussolini wasn't necessarily anti-Semitic as such, but when he went with, as a matter of fact, a lot of Jews were doing pretty well under him before Mussolini went together with Hitler. But he went with Hitler because he needed Hitler to support him, and he followed his policies to the end. But he never he and the Pope would never gotten along, and he would have tried to destroy the Pope if he had the opportunity.
Well, I'm grateful for both keeping the question short and the answer short. We just may get everybody in after all. Peter's on the wild card line in Chicago on the Big 89 for Dan Kurzman. Peter?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you much for the opportunity. After he was elected in 1939, Pius XII issued an encyclical, Summi Pontificatus, and in there, encyclical repudiated Nazism, fascism, communism. The Allies dropped by air 80,000 copies over Germany. After the war, Golda Meir stood before the United Nations and said, and it's very brief here, during the 10 years of Nazi terror, when our people went through the horrors of martyrdom, the Pope raised his voice to condemn the persecutors and to commiserate with their victims. The life of our time has been enriched by a voice that expressed the great moral truths above the tumults of daily conflict. And the third thing, there are so many others, is that the chief rabbi of Rome, Israel Zoli, converted to Catholicism. He was so impressed by Pius' heroism and charity toward the Jews, and he took Eugenio as his name of baptism, that being, of course, Pius's name prior to being.
I go into that in quite detail.
Yeah, it's in the book. It's very interesting. If that's an answer to what other people have said, a lot of this information is in the book. I feel like, in a way, Dan, there are people who are debating things without having read the book yet, which is fair because it's new. And I think they might be surprised when they actually read how much of what they're talking about is being not in the book is in the book. And I think they'd enjoy it. Wildcard line, Joseph is in Washington, D.C. for Dan Kurzman on Coast to Coast AM. Joseph?
Good morning. How are you doing?
Terrific.
Doing
Thank
fine.
You. We're trying to get everybody in. Go ahead.
Excellent. Dan, I am one of the members of the Pacelli family, and I have a quick statement from the family for you and then a question. We've been listening this evening, and we would like to thank you for the manner in which you have assembled and presented the detailed information concerning our ancestor, Heio Heinio. you're raising important facts. It's reassuring to us that scholars such as yourself are still in pursuit of the truth relevant to Eugenio's role during the Second World War. So, on behalf of the family, thank you. The question I have for you is, do you have any plans to continue your research and present it in further books on Pope Pius XII?
I don't know. That depends. I haven't made up my mind what I'm going to do in the future right now. Perhaps I would. All I've tried to do with this book is to put things in perspective. I'm a journalist. You know, I was with the Washington Post for many years, and I just wanted to put it in perspective because I read so many books which made it sound like that Pius was really a devil of some kind, and I had no views about this until I looked into it, and I just wanted to find, as a good journalist, what really was the truth, and it's a complicated situation. It's not a question of whether he's evil or not. I mean, he was a human being, and he had his faults, and he made a lot of errors, like you and I do, and I just try to put the thing together like that without saying, that he's either a saint or a sinner.